I sat there and I realized that family was not genetics. Family was not husband, wife, perfect amount of kids. Family was what we had created. And the bond that my daughters and I have is so special and so unique. And all of a sudden, I took a step back and I was like, I don't want what I thought I want. Because what I have is so much better. You're listening to the Single Momcast. I'm Mel Hyatt.
And I'm Pam Kennealy.
And today we have with us Savannah Pat. Savannah, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
We are so, so excited for you to tell your story today and to just gain a bunch of wisdom.
I just wish everybody could see her. She's just sitting over here. She's absolutely gorgeous. And she's so naturally pretty. And she's these long eyelashes that are just really beautiful. And she's got these cute little boots on. She's just darling. This should be a video on her.
Yeah, not on us, just straight on you, Savannah.
You did the video on how I got here. It's dry shampoo, fake eyelash glue, a shirt I pulled out of the dirty hamper, and sprayed some perfume on.
Okay,
let's go.
Cool?
Okay. Let's go.
Well, those fake eyelashes look real, so I'm just saying.
Okay. Amazon, $11.99.
Okay, I love
that. We're going to go to work. I feel like something bad would happen if I tried.
I know.
Okay, now we know the important things about you, Savannah.
Yes.
Is there anything else other than your dry shampoo and your dirty...
My dirty shirt?
It doesn't look dirty, but that you would like our listeners to know about you before we get into your story?
Yeah, I am a single mom of adopted teenage girls, and I'm just doing it, girl. That's pretty much it.
Just doing it.
Yes.
We're trying our best. What'd you tell me earlier before Savannah got here and I was needing a Pam counseling moment? You said
Just do the next right thing. I don't know.
You said it was profound, Pam.
Oh,
neither of us remember.
Yeah. Say something profound.
You just kept saying, Mel, just keep doing good things. Just keep doing good things. Just keep doing good things.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That's a good word.
That's what we're
going to
do. We're just doing it, Savannah.
Just doing it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Okay. Well, I want to know, Savannah, as we get started. Tell us your story of how you became a single mom. I guess that's a good place to start.
Okay. I was an administrator at a skilled nursing facility. So it's kind of like a nursing home. And I got a call from my weekend manager telling me that there was a little girl sleeping on the floor. So my residents were all geriatric post-acute. And so there should not be any little girls or any child in my facility or in the facility. And so I went up there and there, sure enough, was a 9.5-year-old little girl who had been hiding behind a recliner. She was incontinent. And now I know that she was there about, she thinks she was there about 2 weeks. I think that she had been there about a week or a week and a half. And she was hiding behind the recliner chair in that patient's room. And she would sneak out and take food off of the snack cart when employees weren't paying attention. And she was just urinating and defecating on the floor. And the staff kept trying to find out where the smell was coming from. That's how they found her, because they kept coming in to do room checks. And my nurse was like, I kept checking cleanliness and the smell was so bad. And I finally located it behind a chair and it was red. So it started off as I was going in to address a clinical issue, a resident issue. And the grandmother was my daughter's guardian.
Okay.
And so, I kind of took her under my wing at the facility, and she started following me around. Honestly, I told them that she couldn't stay. And that's the truth. And then I loaded the little girl up in my car. I took her by Sonic, thinking I was like this really helpful 29-year-old. I was like, I'm going to get this sad little child a little happy meal, and I'm amazing. You know, I'm a giver. and I'm going to save people's lives with this Sonic meal. And I took her to one of the scariest places I had ever seen. And she got out of my car, and I left crying and called the owner of the company who said, go back and get her. Like, don't leave her there. And I said, sir, I'm
It was
scared.
Like, where did you?
She was in a trailer park in Southeast Oklahoma City. And there, when we pulled up, there was an actual fight happening in the front yard. So when I pulled up with her in my car, there was I would call it like a brawl, where there were, I learned what a billy club and brass knuckle. I knew brass knuckles my first time to see them. Did not know what a billy club was. Saw it being used, and she said, "That's my dad," and he was part of that event. And she hopped out of my car and ran away into through the fight and towards the trailer, and I skeeted out of there. And I called the owner, and he said, go back and get her. And I said, I'm afraid. So I went back to the facility and got the maintenance man, and he went back with me. And we got her, and the owner approved for her to stay at the facility. And we just, the whole management team took her under our wing. We bought her clothes, and she kind of became the facility mascot. And then she would be waiting for me outside my office every day. When I got to work, I'd bring her in to meet morning meeting, and she would draw me little, I have pictures of what she would draw pictures of me, stick figures on the board. And anyways, it got to the place where I realized she wasn't in school. And sooner or later, I don't know how, one step at a time, I ended up, the grandmother asked if I wanted to adopt her, and I was married at the time. So when I became a mom, I was 29, and I had been married at that time, 8 years. And, so my husband and I, and we've been divorced now for a while, but we were married then. He was like, go ahead, let's do this. So we adopted her together, and then our marriage made it about a year after that. And then it was, me and Ren is my daughter. And then my husband moved out, and 6 weeks after he moved out, I got a call that my daughter Ren's sister had been left at a gas station. So I had just become a single parent. And I had the opportunity to drive to a gas station and pick up a 13-year-old child. And it was my youngest daughter, Ren's first day of the sixth grade. So I had just taken her to school, and I drove to work. And I got a call because I was in custody of a child, of this child's sibling. So they try to keep them in kinship placements. And they asked if I could take her. And I had only met Cheyenne, my second daughter, 3 times. And I was like, heck yeah. Bring her. So I called my lawyer on my way to the Circle K gas station in Yukon, Oklahoma, and said, I'm getting Ren's sister. She's the one that had done Ren's adoption. And she was like, I'll bring paperwork up to your work. So I picked up Cheyenne. I pulled up, and I was like, hey. She was like, what are you doing here? I was like, you want to live with me? And she said, you want me? And I said, heck yeah, girl. I was like, get in. And that was the beginning of probably the best adventure, the three girls, me and my 2 girls. And I had emergency guardianship of Cheyenne at 8:30 a.m. the next morning. My lawyer brought the paperwork up to me to work that day. I filled it all out, went to guardianship, and my second daughter, Cheyenne, had not had a registered guardian since she was 5 years old. So she was currently 13. And so the judge allowed Cheyenne to sign her own consent to be with me. They waived the right for her. It's the legal age is 14 in Oklahoma. But because no one had been a guardian of her since she was 5, he allowed her to sign for herself. And she signed that, and I brought Cheyenne home, and we started the adventure of the three of us at that point.
What an adventure.
What an adventure. That is amazing.
So no training. I did not have training on through DHS. I did everything private. I wasn't looking to adopt. God literally brought me the first daughter, my first love. I call her my first love. Mm-hmm. The first person I think I truly ever loved. And then through that miracle, he brought me the second person I truly ever loved. But with that, as a single mom, going through the loss of a marriage, and 2 girls that had a lot of trauma. It was a lot.
Well, speaking of trauma, Savannah, you mentioned you're in the middle. Well, you go through this divorce, and even when you do good things, they can be traumatic. Do you agree, Pam? Mm-hmm,
absolutely.
And so how did you walk your daughters through the process of healing through significant trauma? And did you, or are you guys still walking? I know that's a heavy question.
That's a real question, and that's what I want to share, honestly, because, I did not know what I was getting into.
Thank goodness, right?
Right. I say that.
The truth in everything we do. I did not know before.
All the time I say, if I had known what it was going to be, I would have been afraid. I'm so glad that I walked into it with complete naivety. And I remember, this is crazy, both times when I was driving to pick up my daughters, the morning after my husband and I had decided to get Ren, take her home and adopt her, I was driving to the nursing home where she was staying. And the song, it's that praise and worship song about water. It's like, oh my gosh. Anyways, it's the one about water, like you have faith. And I was driving and that song came on and I would just start sobbing. So I got Ren. On the way to the gas station, that song came on. And I immediately knew that it was God ordained. So one thing that I did is 100% abandonment to God. There is no playbook. There's no book. I don't care what people say. There is not a book, no matter how normal your life is, that you can read that can lay out and instruct you how to handle it. There's definitely not a playbook on what happens if you're a single mom 6 weeks out of a divorce after a marriage of 10 years. You pick up an abandoned child who's 13 at a gas station. I Googled it. There's nothing.
Yeah.
What do I do if you continuously collect lost children and, you know, and try to
make them your own?
Yes. So one thing I learned is truly complete, like, okay, God, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, yeah. I had never been a mom. I'm making it up. I'm by myself. I don't know. And resource. Like, I am telling you, God, that's another thing, is God continuously brought me connections that I didn't know existed. So my one thing I would tell some mamas out there is art therapy. You could do that for free, but you could Google ways to do art therapy. So God laid something out in front of me and somebody volunteered to come over and do art therapy and that's how I bonded with my first daughter. Okay. Like they would just do an art project and then we'd make it together. We made box houses. And, so it was honestly, I was standing in my house and I had both of my daughters when they came to me were incontinent, 9 years old. It took her till 11 to not wet the bed, but she was incontinent during the day. My 13-year-old was incontinent due to trauma. And so she was wetting herself at school multiple times a day. She was an eighth grader when I got her. And I would sit there and think, like, when I brought them home, they did not know how to bathe. My oldest daughter, we talked about why she never used toilet paper. And she said, Mom, like, we were eating out of dumpsters. We weren't buying toilet paper. Like, I know what it's for, but for 13 years, that was a luxury that we did not have. Why do I need to use it? I survived. I'm walking through basic things, and the trauma is, I think one thing that God taught me is I tried to take these hurt girls and bring them in and make them me. That's not what you do. You let them be where they are. They don't have to fit into society. They don't have to fit in to our culture. Let them be where they are and meet them where they are. And don't try to put all this pressure on them to be healed, to be good, to be smart, to do this. It's like, let's be, you know, let's one thing at a time. Don't worry about your room being dirty. Don't worry about brushing your teeth tonight. Like, let's heal. Let's build trust. And so I really tried to do a once a week free, because I was a single mama, date with them. So they each chose what event they got 30 minutes a week one-on-one, because they would time their hugs. I would hug one. The other one, like, you held her 3 seconds longer. I'm like, hey. Like, one night I would kiss one and I went to kiss the other. Goodbye night. I heard two kisses. Come back. So I had to make everything really even. But it was like so what our date was, light a candle. We would sit in the room and we would just talk one-on-one. Get the trauma. Yeah, sometimes just learning how to connect. Just
exactly. You know, I'm sure you had many unexpected moments, like you were talking about the toilet paper and probably so many more. But tell us about what the behaviors, other behaviors that you encountered that you didn't expect with your girls.
They didn't like sleeping on beds. The comforts and the things that
we thought
was normal. Uh-huh. Yeah. Is not normal. So neither one of them slept on their bed. One slept under the bed and one slept in the closet for a long time. So I just had to, I stopped trying to put them to bed at night. I just allowed them to pick the space that they felt safe. It's very interesting that they wanted to be somewhere closed where they knew what was on all sides of them. So, under the bed or in the closet. So just wasn't expecting that. I truly wasn't expecting incontinence. Teaching someone who was 9 and a half and waking her up every 2 hours to toilet her at night, hoarding food. So they were just constantly hoarding food. Fear of being away from me. So my littlest would not go outside to play because she was afraid that if she went outside to play, I wouldn't be there when she got back. So literally having to pick her up and take her to the front yard and set her on like a little picnic blanket and teaching her that she can be outside with me. We literally had to slowly, she was so afraid of abandonment. They each handle their trauma a little bit different. One trusts no one and one overattaches. So once you thought you got one thing figured out, my other daughter would present something a little bit differently. One had no desire to be touched by boys. One craved that only. I don't know.
I mean, you were just thrown into the deep end. Mm-hmm. But you said something really profound, and you said it twice in two different answers that I think it does not matter if we are talking about adoptive, foster, however you became a single mom, or if you're out there listening and maybe you don't even have custody of your kids. You said something so incredible when you said, I stopped trying to make them be like me and just let them be who they are. Like, goodness, Pam, mm-hmm. didn't you? Svan, I needed you to tell me that like 20 years ago.
Yes.
But that, what a brave thing to do, because out of fear, which I'm sure there's a lot of fear in that moment where you're going, oh my goodness, like, the closet, sleep, all the things, right? It wasn't a storybook, and you didn't react out of fear. I love that you were just like stayed this constant course. So I just wanted to bravo you to that and then repeat what you said, because I thought that was profound. You also mentioned resources and art therapy. And one of the things that we really push here at Arise is the reality that single moms and all moms in general need resources. So talk to me more about other things that you did, because those are so practical. And I hope that not if you're driving, mom, but be writing these down and be thinking Google art therapy. But what other resources can we offer?
Yes. And I was looking for things that were free and that I could do myself.
Yeah.
We did the art projects together. We did a theme night once a week. And so we would, you could Google, mamas, you could Google fun, free activities at home. And I found one that said to have a dress-up night. And so I came up, we would pull out a theme. I wrote themes that I knew I had stuff in the house with. And we had Goofy Night, or I let my daughter write some. One picked Gangsta Night. We had Awkward Night, Dork Night. We would pick a theme, and then we set a timer, and we each had to go to our own rooms, and we had 3 minutes to dress the part. Then whatever we wore, we had to wear where we went. So we rush out, and we'd vote who had the best costume, and then that person who got the best costume picked what we did. We might go to the park.
Her house is a fun house.
I was just thinking, like, I want to hang out.
Dork night. Yeah.
The Dork Night was our favorite.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. I had a fake little mustache I found, and it was a blast. And that night, we actually went to dinner, and we had to stay in character. And it taught my girls, one, we don't care what people think. We were a family creating our own memory, and it was a good social experiment to see how people treated us differently, dressing like, you know, crazy. But I really spent a lot of time Googling like ways to build intimacy and trust within my family, because mine was different, this situation. But I'm sure there's times as a mama that you're just separated from your kids. There's like a division of life, and you've lost track of that connection, that intimacy. And honestly, you just don't really like them, and they probably don't like you just because of life. But for me, it was like I was literally one woman with two kids that were older, and I'm trying to figure out how for us to even get to know each other.
Yeah.
So if you focus on building the relationship with your kids, just naturally, you kind of get past that breakdown, and that trust starts building.
That's good.
You know, I just want to say, within time, and I say this to you moms, because I know when I was a single mom, and Mel, when you were a single mom, we had envisioned in our mind what a family should look like.
Yeah.
And it should be, you know, the husband and the wife and the perfect little kids under a roof and the picket fence and dogs up front and everything. But we find this a lot with our single moms, and we have learned through the years that sometimes we just have moms have to stop. I don't know where you are, what you're thinking today, but sometimes you have to reframe what a family looks like. And you certainly had to do that. So talk to us just a second about your thoughts to our moms, that what it looks like to reframe your thoughts about what a family looks like.
I think that's the most freeing thing I've experienced as a woman, not just as a mama, but as a woman too, because we have this image, whatever it is in your head, you know what the image is that you thought your life was going to be. It could be your career, your family, everything. In my image was kids, lots of them. I'm a baby of there's five sisters, and everyone had lots and lots of kids. God gave me something so different. And I remember like crying in my bathroom sometimes. Like I wanted to be pregnant. I wanted to know what that felt like. I wanted to look at a child and see myself in them. And what I got was a blonde, blue-eyed little girl, and I'm a brunette with brown eyes. I got a light brown hair with green eyes, little girl, and it was the craziest thing. But I sat there and I realized that family was not genetics. Family was not husband, wife, perfect amount of kids. Family was what we had created. And the bond that my daughters and I have is so special and so unique. And all of a sudden, I took a step back and I was like, I don't want what I thought I want. Because what I have is so much better. And it's beautiful. I became a mom, and I was older when I became a mom. I became a mom at almost 30. But my kids were older. So it looks like I became a mom at like 18. And right now, I've only been a mom for a little over 10 years. And I have a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old. None of it makes sense. And I had to redefine what family is and what success is in a family. And I just shed the expectation of, like, I'm not trying to compare or fit into what the society says is successful as a mom. I don't care when I got her, she couldn't read. If she was bringing home, I remember us picking her up in our school district. Every week you get a letter if your kids are failing. I remember getting her grades, and it went up from a 30 to a 32 in her math class, as in a 32, which is still an F. And I high-fived her, redefining what is success. Success is not being a straight A student. Success is trying and being disciplined. Family is not having a husband and a wife and these perfect kids who are in every sport who do all the right things. Family is created in the bond that you make it. It's in the experience. And all of a sudden, I just freed myself from trying to be like everyone else. And I just decided to focus on what I have and freaking relish it and stop wanting what I don't have and enjoying what I do have.
Well, that's so beautiful, because that fits into the other thing I was going to ask you about, community isolation and what that looks like and how you build a tribe to support you as a family, even though you feel community isolation. You just talked about that you just focus on what's in front of you, and you're present with the kids and what's in front of you. And so moms, is you're listening to her, you know, speak to the moms that are feeling that way, what they can do to be present with their kids.
You know, I would say right now, stop comparing yourself to anyone else. And honestly, it's not even anyone else. I compared myself to the standard of myself that I thought I was going to be or I wanted to be. And I just stopped. And instead of creating this false sense of Savannah and who she was supposed to be, I just chose to like who I am and give myself grace in what I was currently doing. And you just focus on being okay with where you are in your PJs or your stained shirt or your dry shampoo, whatever it is, and don't isolate yourself out of shame. Love yourself where you are, exactly where you are.
Don't isolate out of shame.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. I want to tell you guys something my really good friend Leslie told me, and I don't know if she got this in therapy or watched something or invented it, but we were talking and she said, you know, when we're young, we paint this portrait of what our life is going to look like. And she's still single, and her life is an incredible life. And she said, but you look at that and you're comparing your life to this painting that you painted for some of us, like when we were 9, right? Or 13, or God forbid we painted it when we were in our 20s, you know, like 21, like this is what my life is going to look like. And she said, the problem is I'm comparing what my life currently looks like to that painting. And so what I need to do is I need to take that painting down and I need to paint my life as it is and see that it is beautiful. And she said, so I'm trying to like mentally remind myself to take that old painting down. That is, it might have been what I thought, but like, look at how beautiful this is. And for me, I've thought of that so many times because it was this mental picture of, let's just take this down. You can just put it up in the attic because, you know, maybe someday it'll be worth something, but paint the new painting. And maybe for you, it was just out of survival mode, but I feel like you are so wise. And like, and I also understand we're not doing the highlight story at all, but we are doing a snippet of your story. I understand there's probably moments where you're like, guys, all this wisdom, I earned it the hard way, right?
Absolutely.
And we see, I think I see that. I'm like, man, this, you know, you're wise, but I also know that we often get wisdom in those dark moments. And I just, I think that that is such a cool just picture of, let's just focus, not even on what I thought I was supposed to be or other people, but like who we really are becoming. And I just like high five you, Savannah, high fives. Like that's so awesome. So let's, I want to circle back around to something that you said. You talked about one trust, one over trust, one doesn't. Trust is so imperative in relationships, especially with children. Goodness. How did you even, is there practical things that you did to even build just a little baby step of trust? And you were dealing with brokenness that you didn't create. The problem with my children, Savannah, is oftentimes they act a certain way and I know exactly why they are. Oh, wonder why, you know, but for you, you were handed, and I'm not saying that they're broken.
Right.
Right. They were bent and they were hurt and somebody else did that. And then you inherited the trauma from that. So how were there, what baby steps, what practical steps did you take for trust?
And I will say, I think a lot of people when are afraid to say words around adoption, but absolutely me and my girls, our lives were broken.
Yeah.
They lost their family. Like for me to be an adopted mom, adoptive mom, my girls went through trauma. They lost people. And so I think a lot of times, you know, you don't have to dance around the words around adoption because we were broken. I was broken out of marriage. They were broken out of their family and we came together and we had to build that trust. Practicality of building trust is literally taking the time to listen and connect. I had a lot of times I felt so confused by them. I'd like look at them and be like, what is going on? And like, one, I'll give you a simple example. My oldest daughter, Cheyenne, it was probably within the first couple months I had her and I was in a room, we were talking and out of nowhere, she came up and she chest bumped me like man, like gorilla chest bump. Like, okay. And she goes, come at me, brah. And I said, brah? I was like, that's what I put my boobs in. I was like, I go, are you mad at me? And she, I was like, look, sit down. She sat down next to me and I said, are you angry? And she said, yeah. I said, well, I want you to tell me why. Because saying, come at me, brah, I have no idea what's going on. Tell me how you feel. And she looked at me and she said, I don't know how. Hmm. And I was like, well, I said, girl, I'm going to teach you. And she said, don't give up on me. So I think for me, I had to recognize that not everybody communicates in the same way. And I think as parents, we get caught in what our kids are doing wrong, but we aren't looking at why. And sometimes it's like, almost like you're solving a mystery. And I learned, number one, I never gave them a consequence or reacted until I had time to process. So my rule was 24 hours. So if something happened, I just immediately would be like, hey, I want you to go to your room and we're going to talk about it tomorrow. Because sometimes I don't know what the heck I'm doing and I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And I know, so, and I'm mad. And I'm like, if I say something, I'm going to verbally abuse you, like for real. Like I want to, and so I would take myself away and then I would give myself time to process what actually happened. And then it gave me a time to sit down with my child and be real with them and say like, okay, I see that you did this. Well, I did this. What I just said to you out of anger was wrong. It was mean and it was belittling and you deserve better than that. And as a mom, I learned the best way for me to build trust with my kids was be honest about my own mistakes towards them, in front of them, in teaching them that I'm vulnerable. I can admit when I'm wrong. I can admit when I wrong you, ask for forgiveness, and then vice versa. That's what they did. And it began this process of bonding where it opened that door for them. They would come to me with questions that most kids won't ask their parents because they wanted to know how to do life, even if what they had done was wrong. So you're not getting a consequence, but we're learning from life. So I think
I love that. That is so beautiful. You know what? There's so much more to your story. I know that, I wish we could get into, but I guess here in closing, Savannah, is there anything else that you would want our single moms to know that we, that you haven't said? I know there's so many things, but is there anything especially on your mind that you would want to say to our moms?
I would say, girl, it's okay. And you got this. Forgive yourself. Don't expect perfection. Just take one step at a time, and you got it. You're going to be okay. You're going to be okay.
Wow. You know, I love that. And I think about your story of finding these two children and basically just these orphans and just taking them. And God's, one of God's main character is justice. It's He desires justice. And I just want to commend you, even though you know God led you to do this, that you took steps to do what was right in justice. And that's God's heart towards these kids, that He desires no child to be in a family that they're not loved. And you took drastic, very sacrificial steps to step into their lives and bring them into your care. And I'm reminded of a verse I thought about before this podcast that would describe you, Savannah. And it is...
Let's hear it, Pam.
Yeah, as I read your story in the magazine, and it's from Psalm 82. It says, it's God speaking, give justice to the weak and the fatherless. You have done that. Maintain the right of the afflicted and the destitute. You did that. Rescue the weak and the needy. You did that. And then it goes on to say, so the Lord your God may bless you and all the work of your hands. Savannah, would you say you have been blessed?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I wish you could see her face. Her eyes are red with tears wanting to roll down her face. That moms, when you face injustice, you just need to know that that's God's heart. He desires justice for you in your struggles wherever you are. And that's what we've heard from Savannah, that God loves you. You can do this. You know, God wants to uphold you. He desires justice in your life. And He is the only one, amen, Mel, the only one,
amen,
who can make right all the wrong that has happened to you. He's the only one, but He desires to uphold you. And I had fun looking up this little word, girls, before this podcast, and it's the word uphold, because we all go through times we just need to be upheld by God. But the Hebrew meaning is so rich, and I just want to share them with you real quick. And I'm going to ask you, Savannah, if God did this for you. But the first one, first of all, uphold in the Bible is a transitive verb. And I'm a former grammar teacher, so I just love the fact that it's an action word that requires somebody to receive it. God wants to uphold you. But
yes,
not,
that's
but,
what transitive verb meant. I
wow.
knew that, didn't you?
Yes,
say?
No,
yes.
I didn't.
Just
thank
pretend
you for
that I didn't
I was,
know.
Yeah.
I was going to Google.
Me too, Google.
But here's the deal, girls. He wants you to be the object of that. Mm. He wants you to be the object of the person He upholds. And so there's four meanings of that. The first one, Savannah, the first meaning of uphold is suggest someone who aggressively meets your opposition, an advocate. Would you say that God has upheld you as the object and He has been your advocate?
100%.
100%. Moms, did you hear that?
100%.
The second Hebrew meaning of uphold is it implies extended sustenance given to something attacked. God is your defender. Would you say you have been the object that God has upheld in
Absolutely.
That way?
Absolutely.
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 The third word for uphold is indicate support given to one who is failing or falling. God is your catch net. You are the object of His catch net. Would you say He has been your upholder in that way?
Absolutely. He's been my parachute.
He's been your parachute. I love that as well.
You've got to pull that string.
I've been failing and falling for a long time, but He's made it really smooth.
I know. I love the way you did your little body. It's so smooth, you know. He's keeping you alive. He's keeping you floating through the disaster. He's keeping you safe. I love that. And then the last one is for uphold is denotes one who publicly defends one unjustly attacked, or too weak, or absolutely too weak to advocate on his own. Well, that is just, that's what you have felt like so many times, too weak.
Too weak, on hiding in a closet, crying, not knowing what to do, and
yes.
thinking, how did I get here?
Yes.
How did I get here?
Yes. But He has upheld you. And so, moms, in closing today, I want you to take this verse, write it on a post-it note, put it on your, I'm a post-it note person, put it on your steering wheel or your bathroom mirror or your work, wherever it is. And I've added a few words to make it with the synonyms, and we've said it many times. Isaiah 41:10 in closing is this. So do not fret. Do not wrestle, for I am with you. I go before you. I know what I'm doing. Do not be dismayed or disheartened, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will fortify you and help you. I will uphold you, enforce you, pluck you out of danger with my righteous right hand, for I am your God. As Savannah said, your parachute as well. Your God who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, do not fear, do not fret, worry, or be tasseled. Why? Because I will help you. God bless you, single mom. Please come back to more podcasts of Arise, Single Moms.